commentary on Matthew called Matthew 2 the first Star Trek. I didn't choose that name for our bulletin, but it kind of makes sense. Matthew stresses the wise men coming who were not Jewish. Now, all through the book, Jesus is the King of Israel, and Matthew basically has him as the King of Israel and has a Jewish slant, but he begins with non-Jewish people coming to Jesus. That's the start. And then the end of Matthew gives the Great Commission, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations." So while the book's thesis is a Jewish slant and King of the Jews, Matthew's story makes sure from the beginning to the end that all nations are included. So, at the start of Matthew chapter 2, the non-Jewish wise men, wherever they are from, will come to worship Jesus. Come with me to Matthew chapter 2. And our first section will be verses 1 and 2. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, Magi, wise men, King James, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born King of the Jews? For, because we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." After Jesus was born. Do you know how much long after? We'll talk a little bit about the order and possible timing later. After Jesus was born. Born in Bethlehem, Beit Lechem, house of bread. So, granaries, grain fields at the very least, all kinds of farming going on around there. Bethlehem was very, very small, yet it was very, very historical. I don't know, like in American history, maybe Gettysburg. It's not very big, but everybody knows what happened there. In the Old Testament, Ruth ended up in Bethlehem. She came with her mother-in-law Naomi and moved to Bethlehem, and then she was out in the fields, and out in the fields she met Boaz, and then eventually down through the line is King David, and King David was born in Bethlehem. And Samuel anointed David king in Bethlehem. So, most famous for Jesus being born there, but all Jewish people in the Old Testament already knew about the place because of David. Matthew does not say why the Jesus family moved from Nazareth to Bethlehem for a while. Not in here. Luke has told us that there was a taxation or a census, and everybody had to go to their hometown. Stepfather Joseph had to go to Bethlehem because he was down to the lineage of David, so he had to go there. Doesn't say that here, but we get it from Luke. After Jesus' birth, we'll talk about how much long after, they're still in Bethlehem, and then it gives the days of King Herod. Today is not a good day for information on chronology, but my favorite chronology of the Old Testament has Herod dying March 4th, B.C. 4. So Jesus was actually born in B.C. 5 or B.C. 4. Probably winter or spring, exact date is not known. The Magi came from the east. And because we have so many family people, I will say again, my hometown, the high school mascot is the Magi. That can't be real common. Last time I looked, there isn't any other place like it. So on football games, we have white rabbits running around with canes saying, "You will drop the ball." Anyway, that's the name of couple of restaurants, Magi Cafe. There are three magic stores, and most of the magic tricks made in America are made in that place. So I always think of home, although this is from the east. Where in the east? Well, the empire in those days was called Parthia, and it had the towns of Babylon, and it was from the older empire of the Persians. So there's a persistent belief that these men were from the east. They were from what was then called Parthia and these other places. Several authors say that there was at this time an expectation all over the Middle East that a ruler would come. In fact, I have three of them. I will not quote them, but there are three first century authors outside of the Bible that said everybody expected a ruler would come about this time. So these Magi were probably knowing about that. But the Magi also knew Jewish people and Jewish writings. Earlier in the Old Testament, the Babylonians conquered Jerusalem, destroyed the city and the temple, and dragged all these Jews to Babylon. Taking them into exile, the Persians took over, and there still were a lot of Jews there. Handwriting on the wall was the night when things changed in the book of Daniel. Daniel was high in both kingdoms. Esther was high in the Persian kingdoms. So was Nehemiah, cupbearer, but kind of like poison control, kind of like security guard for the emperor. They were allowed to return, but some stayed. One weird time in Israel, we asked the bus driver, "Where are you from?" He said, "Iraq," which was surprising. Good thing he got out of there. But there were still Jews in Babylon, and the wise men could read the Jewish books. They could read the book of Daniel. And Daniel had said, from the time of the decree to rebuild the temple, there will be 69 times 7 groups of years. And their year is only 360 days. So the exact date, if we're following, say, Harold Honer, which I like his book, it runs right out on Palm Sunday. So the wise men probably knew the book of Daniel. The wise man knew the law of Moses, and in the law of Moses, Numbers 42:17, a star shall come forth from Jacob, a scepter shall arise from Israel. So likely they knew the Old Testament about the weeks of Daniel and about a star appearing from the book of Numbers. Maybe the zodiac, Christian authors go both ways on there. Some of them say no. Some of them say there was an original Old Testament meaning to the zodiac, which is not the modern meaning, but an original Old Testament. Like Henry Morris of the Institute of Creation for Research, he argues for that. Some sign in Virgo, Virgin Mother, Leo the Lion, maybe Jesus, the Lion, the tribe of Judah, maybe some weird sign. But they knew the book of Daniel. The wise men knew the book of Daniel. The wise men knew about the star from the book of Numbers. Maybe the zodiac. It doesn't look like they knew the book of Micah. But Micah wasn't in Babylon, because that's coming. They don't know where the Messiah will be born. They knew about the time. They saw something in the sky. I'm going to take it as a guiding light, not so much a great big star. Asteros is the Greek word. We get asteroid from it, so it's correctly translated as a star. But it must have been small enough to take them to the place where Jesus was, kind of like a guiding light. There are in the books, you know, it was a three planets coming together. My thought on that is the wise men would know three planets are coming together. And I don't know how that would take them to Bethlehem, three planets coming together. Then other ones say a nebular explosion. Well, the wise men would know a nebular explosion. I don't know how that would guide them anywhere. So I think probably best a guiding light. not for sure whether they saw it in the east and it guided them all the way to Jerusalem and then stopped, or whether they saw it in the east and then it stopped and they knew from the Bible enough to go to Jerusalem, but it comes up again in leaving Jerusalem after they talk with Herod. It'll come up again and take them on the way. We don't know how many wise men there were. Magi does mean stargazer. That's kind of what they did. Partly scientific, but probably partly also pagan religion, a little bit of each. Our Christmas music has three of them because there are three gifts, and even in the tradition they have their names, and we don't know their names. So the rulers of the wise men came, maybe a larger caravan than we might think. Because often in the cards and so forth, we have three on camels and that's that. But I think probably a very large caravan. Not quite the kings of Parthia, not quite the kings of Persia, but very high ups, say maybe in the academic system, and probably had bodyguards and security forces. And we can kind of see how they get a little bit scared when they see them coming. 35 years before, the Parthians had conquered Jerusalem. The Romans took it back, but it'd be like an enemy from the 1990s, that it was a tough fight back then. And here they come, maybe a couple hundred of them. So, verse 3, we continue, and Herod is troubled. Verse 3. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him, gathering together all the chief priests and the scribes of the people. He inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They said to him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for this has been what was written by the prophet, quoting Micah. And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the leaders of Israel. For out of you shall come forth a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Herod was the ruler, but he was not Jewish. He was what we would now call Edomite. Great big books are written about him. I know all kinds of things about him, but he ended up being the ruler without being Jewish. And when he heard about the king of the Jews, who was Jewish, he was very, very upset. The Magi knew messianic prophecy. The Magi's knew about Daniel and probably about the star in Moses, but they did not know about Micah. Micah gave the place of his birth, so the scribes and the prophets knew right away where the Old Testament say would be born, in Bethlehem. So they have a prediction that they will be born in the town. My addition here is all these prophecies that cannot be artificially faked. If we went around here, we'd have all these places we were born and none of us chose them. We can't choose the place of our birth. So here is a prophecy that cannot be artificially faked. The time of his birth cannot be artificially faked. That his mother would claim a virgin birth cannot be artificially faked. In a lot of cases, the prophecies about Jesus could not be artificially faked and made up by some pretender. He fulfilled the Old Testament prophecies, and he could not have done things to artificially fulfill them, like where he was born. Herod, already worried about it, king of the Jews, He expects the wise men will go now to Bethlehem. It's only 6 miles to the south, 6 miles away. No doubt he's already planning on killing the children there. And then in verses 7 and 8, let me know where they are. Let's read verses 7 and 8. Then Herod secretly called the Magi, private, in the throne room, determined from them the exact time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the child. And when you have found him, report to me so that I too may come and worship him. University of Toronto made a great big thick book on Herod. So much is known about him outside the Bible that you can write a 300 or 400 page book and hardly even use the Bible. And one of the things we'll just say today, he was a criminal. He was an absolute murderer. Now, we want to talk about good things and worshiping Jesus. We're not going to talk about all of his murders, but he killed some of his wives. He had 11 of them. He killed, I think, 3. He killed some of his own sons. His mother-in-law got in a coffin and had a funeral procession take her out of the city to get away to Cleopatra, and he found her. She was gone, too. He would have dreams about all the people he killed. He would have nightmares about them talking to them. When terminally ill, he filled a horse track stadium with thousands of Jews, and he ordered that when the news of his death was going around, to kill them all, because he wanted somebody to cry on the day of his death. He died, and nobody obeyed any of it. So they all got out. They were all okay. But I say all of this to say, really bad. So there isn't much information out of the Bible about killing the baby boys, but he killed all kinds of people. It was like all in a week's worth for him. Maybe not every day, but all in a week's worth. He was always doing this. His biography, a murderer, fits right here what he's trying to do. But we will go on because the stress here is on worshiping the baby Jesus. That's not what Herod will do, but that's what the wise men will do. Verse 9 and following. After hearing the king, they went their way, and the star, the Asterus, which they had seen in the east, Andalou, I think that made it into English too a little bit. They saw the star which they had seen in the east, went on before them until it came and stood over the place where the child was. Now when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And after coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell to the ground and worshipped him. Not her. Worshipped him. Not her. Close of verse 11. And opening their treasures, they presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So the star reappeared and guided them. The guiding aspect kind of makes me think of a light rather than a great big star. Actually, a stellar component. It's a specific guiding light. It is said to be the same one they had seen in the east. And again, did they see the guiding light all the way from Persia? Maybe. Or did they see the light, then it disappeared, and they knew enough from the Bible to go to Jerusalem? And here it is appearing again. And the last part, at the very least, is very true. Knowing that they would see Jesus in verse 10 caused great joy. In earlier Christmas sermons, they're like a devotional. We study joy. The presence of God in a life is the source of great joy. The joy of the Lord is our strength. Nehemiah, way back in Nehemiah 8:10. And you kind of see it here. They're going to go to the presence of Jesus. They're going to have joy. I'd like to do it the opposite way, though. People that don't want anything to do with Jesus, they're not really going to have satisfaction in life. Might have a little excitement. Might last for a day or two. Not going to have contentment. Not going to have great joy. Unless, like we see here, they want to go be in the presence of Jesus. The guiding star took them. Verse 11 says this was a place, a house. Okay, house, not a stable. I did notice in my study Bible in the notes that says it still could be just about the same day. They move right out of the manger and into a house. Well, maybe. But later, when they bring Jesus to the temple at day 40, they have no gold. When they bring Jesus on day 40, they could not afford to buy a cow for his dedication. They could not afford to buy a sheep for his dedication. They did birds. And birds were for the poorest people. So, while it can't be proven, I think that they didn't have any money yet. They went to the temple with a baby dedication and bought birds, which archaeologists have found little urns that had pictures of birds on them. So it is true they brought birds when they didn't have any money. So I think probably, not that big a deal, but I think probably the wise men came later after the shepherds. Person wants to say they're the same night, okay, but they didn't have any money at the baby dedication 40 days later. Also, there's no reference to Joseph here. It's not a stable, it's a house. There's no reference to Joseph. They saw Mary and the child. So maybe a different time. Maybe not quite together. It doesn't matter that much, but maybe not quite together. The goal of life is not to worship self. That's very, very common. The goal of life is to worship the Lord Jesus Christ, and then self will be blessed. It's kind of a result. There is a result of blessing from doing what the wise men do, but that's not what the goal is. They, still doesn't say what number of them are, they, these magi, how many? I still think a caravan, even though we don't know how many magi. They brought three gifts. Gold. They didn't have it when they went to the temple 40 days later, but they brought them gold. Frankincense and myrrh, and of course these are like in the singing, these are like perfumes. Frankincense, a powder. You kind of light it on fire and it smells good in the room. Myrrh, like a gummy stuff mixed with oil, kind of like a perfume. Brought for a king. I noticed the song also had for embalming a dead body. Maybe. Maybe the wise men knew the future because they looked at prophecy. Maybe. Not 100% certain. What's more certain is they were bringing him to worship him. They were bringing him for a king. So worship is the main teaching here, to exalt, to promote, to lift up. That's what they did, gave great joy. One more verse, they're going to go back a different way. And having been warned by God, verse 12, and having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, the Magi left for their own country by another way. Well, we don't want to make Christmas sermon a political sermon, but is there such a thing as disobeying politicians? When they ask a person to disobey God, then the politicians need to be disobeyed. Started in the Old Testament, the Pharaoh says, throw the boy babies in the river. The midwives, no. We will obey God first, not you. Acts chapter 5, the high priest and the Sanhedrin said, teach no more in the name of Jesus. The apostle said, Acts 5:29, we must obey God rather than humans. You have the example here. Come back here and tell me where he is. And God said, go home a different way. Well, go home a different way and don't go back and don't obey him at all. God has in his Bible both Jews and Gentiles. That's where we started. Gentiles in the book of Matthew, even though the book is on Jesus as the King of the Jews. Gentiles at the beginning, Gentiles at the end on the Great Commission. All these Old Testament prophecies of Jesus. There are as many as 300. Maybe not 300 real impressive ones, but there are dozens and dozens of impressive ones. They cannot be artificially fulfilled. One cannot choose his ancestry. One cannot choose the place of birth. One cannot choose the time of birth. One could certainly not choose that the mother would claim a virgin birth. Jesus did not artificially fulfill them. They show who he is. Bethlehem tied to King David. Bethlehem tied to the greater son of David. Stress in here, though, is worship. One who worships Jesus will have life fulfilled. One who does not worship Jesus can have short-term excitement, but not contentment, not fulfillment in life. The invitation is to come to Jesus, to trust in him as Savior, and then to come to Jesus all the rest of the life for worship. And the musicians, please come.